For those of you who are attending for the first time and have not taken advantage of any of the printed matter that is available to you, we would point out that Technocracy is a non-profit, non-political, non-sectarian membership organization of North American citizens, working and planning for a new social order based on science and technology. Technocracy is an educational movement with no affiliations, foreign or otherwise. Technocracy is incorporated under the laws of New York State, has offices and members throughout continental North America and its offshore possessions, and operates through its own continental headquarters, regional divisions, sections, and organizers as a competent body of concerned citizens. Technocracy is the only 100% North American social movement in history. It derives nothing from and is entirely opposed to communism, socialism, Nazism, fascism, conservatism, liberalism, autocracy, and all other political philosophies, because they are all alien importations incapable of operating the complex high-energy social mechanism installed here on this continent. Science and technology alone can create the new North America. Technocracy is based on the scientific appraisal and intelligent organization of North America's physical resources, installed equipment, and human skill. Technocracy provides unvarnished facts and scientific study of the causes of our North American social problem. Its members have organized voluntarily to inform more and more North Americans, first, as to the totally new technological trends underlying our economic and social unrest, and second, as to the design of a new social order and impregnable defense. A social order and defense which must include the entire North American continent and be based on our great production technology. The destiny of this North American continent is to unite, operate, and distribute. Technocracy's research began in 1918, as we said earlier, and all events since have confirmed its prediction of social trends and economic conditions. It became a continental social movement in 1933. And continues to enlist the active support of all North American citizens who really want and have the courage to demand peace, prosperity, and survival here and now on this land area. Technocrats are patriotic citizens from all walks of life. Membership is of one class only, open to all North American citizens. Aliens and politicians are ineligible. Technocracy is supported solely by the dues and donations of its membership, by literature sales, and at times such as this, by the miserable inadequacy of the collection plate. It receives no subsidy and has no debt. Annual membership dues are $9, $9 a year, or 75 cents a month. The dues are kept low so that no one can be excluded on the basis of economic hardship. Through voluntary work, it carries on research, operational designing, publications, public meetings, lecture tours, study classes, and other related activities. But what does Technocracy say and propose? It says that this continent has the resources, the already installed equipment, and the trained personnel to produce more than enough physical wealth for all its citizens. that this will be accompanied by unsurpassed freedom and leisure, and that this can be achieved only by a new form of social organization. The organization will be a technological operation on a continental scale. It is difficult to explain in a few words, but briefly, it means the application of science and technology to social operation. When a society has the productive capacity to produce more than enough of everything for everybody, neither value, price, money, crime, business, nor politics can exist. These things cannot exist without creating extreme social unrest and instability. Abundance renders unworkable our present system, the price system. Now, this continent's decision between abundance and chaos must be made very soon now, and by a majority of adult North American citizens. Technocracy's function is to inform these citizens of their coming social responsibility. This social transition must be achieved without disorder or chaos. Disorder and chaos on any large or protracted scale could destroy our technology, which, if you don't already realize, keeps all of us alive every day of our lives. This demands intelligent organization now. Technocracy is notifying every intelligent, courageous, loyal North American that your future tomorrow rests on your actions today. Technocracy offers the design blueprints for the distribution of abundance and security for every citizen of this continent. Technocracy salutes you for your attention and awaits your investigation. I'll be back shortly for your questions.
Well, all that should have given you some food for thought. The ushers will now begin collecting the question cards. Should you require an additional card or a pencil, again, just raise your hand. And while the cards are being collected, I will make a few announcements. Here, and hope we'll get a few more as the evening wanders on. So I will ask the speaker back to answer your questions. Good.
How would technocracy solve the drug problem? Well, the drug problem, ladies and gentlemen, is very much a part of the price system. Who do you suppose would stay interested in that kind of business endeavor if there was no profit to be realized from that activity? Not very many, I suspect. And just in addition to that, I guess my own work is not really the subject here tonight, but I've worked with the Provincial Ambulance Service for many years and was one of the first what they call paramedic trained people in this area. Before we had the drug morphine sulfate added to our protocols, one of the doctors from Vancouver General Hospital had intended to come and ride as an observer with the ambulance in U.S. Minister one particular evening, and he thought it would be an idea if he brought along a small quantity of morphine sulfate just in case we had some myocardial infarct, you know, the imminent chest pains or pulmonary edemas or congestive heart failures with which morphine is one of the drugs of choice used initially in the pre-hospital or in the emergency ward treatment. What we were doing at that time was preparing to take the emergency room to the patient rather than wait till the patient got to the emergency room. And he forgot this small quantity of morphine sulfate, and he remembered when he was halfway out to New Westminster from the Vancouver General Hospital, and he stopped at a drugstore, but he couldn't get the small quantity that he had intended, 10 or 15 milligram vial. The smallest quantity he could buy on that kind of short notice was a 300 milligram multi-dose vial, and that cost him less than $3. 300 milligrams of morphine would have kept half the junkie population happy for, I suppose, the whole weekend. So the stuff initially is not expensive. It's not expensive to make. As a matter of fact, the most expensive way you can buy it is in the smallest vial that it comes in, which I think is maybe 5 or 10 milligrams. It costs just as much to enclose 10 milligrams of morphine in a glass vial than it does to get a big bottle or a gallon jug. It doesn't have to be expensive. The opium that comes from other parts of the world initially saw something on television one time where they're tracing the growing of the poppies and the initial refining into great big cakes that weigh 4 kilos to a brick. That the people that do the first stage of refining get something like $8 for it. And by the time it changes hands several times and gets refined further and gets into the illicit distribution system, that 4 kilo block of raw opium markets on the street for absolutely millions and millions of dollars. So again, it's not expensive to come by. The fact that it is illicit is what makes the price skyrocket. If it's scarce, any price at all can be asked. If it's abundant, the price declines to virtually nothing. Years ago, the British National Health Scheme tried to do something about people who were addicted to heroin. And the plan was to make it free to all addicts who would register with the plan. The idea was that their habit would be determined. They would never be allowed to increase their requirement, but what they did require would be provided free of charge to keep them on an even keel. When you're addicted, and your body craves and absolutely needs that substance in order to keep you on an even keel. They would keep these people supplied so that they wouldn't have to steal in order to get the supply. But the illicit marketeers moved in, and for a very, very small charge, were providing that extra amount that produced the euphoria that I suppose is desired by these people who are unfortunately addicted. I suppose in a technocracy it would be decided that, well, much the same thing. If you're addicted, you would be maintained and encouraged to decrease your dependency until you could leave it alone entirely, but never increase it. Secondly, I guess it's your body, and if that's what you want to do with your body, that's your business. But through the process of education, I'm sure it would be possible to let the population know what the end result of these kinds of addictions of all sorts would be, and whether it's tobacco or alcohol or heroin, cocaine, all of these things, they are dead-end streets, and the end result is death. At the present time, a lot more crime is indulged in by people who are addicted because it is illegal. They have to indulge in all manner of behavior that is socially unacceptable, that would not have to be indulged in when your right to food, clothing, shelter, health care, education, transportation, communication, and recreation is taken care of as the responsibility of the society as a whole by virtue of your citizenship in the technate. But the problem, for the most part, would disappear virtually entirely. Do machines create jobs? Yes, machines create jobs for more machines. True, for a while, when any new technology comes online, there are people absorbed into that new field of endeavor. But soon, we find that once the machines are installed and operating, the majority of the people involved in bringing those new machines online are no longer required. Technocracy is making the point that at least since the end of the First World War, it has not been necessary for the majority of the able-bodied men and women of this continent to be working and slaving in order to obtain an income so that you may enjoy some of the goodies that are available here on this continent. Technocracy points out and pointed out a long time ago that when the transition from price system to technate is complete, the average work week would be reduced to probably 16 hours or less per individual per week. Now, with the amount of technology installed producing the goods and providing the services that we all require, and this being brought about by a minority of the workforce, keep in mind that as new technologies move in, the slack has temporarily been taken up by people moving into the service industries, which for the most part pay minimum wage. The high-paying wages that used to be in logging and mining and smelting and milling and manufacture are fast disappearing. And there are more people unemployed and underemployed and technologically disemployed at present than we have ever had before. The figures that we hear from time to time regarding the percentage of unemployed are very difficult to provide any valid information. The only people that are counted as being unemployed are those people who are drawing unemployment insurance benefits and those who are registered with, in this country, Canada Manpower and are actively seeking employment are the only ones that are counted as being unemployed. Anyone who is on welfare is not counted as unemployed. Anyone who is working part-time, even if it's only a few hours a week, is not counted as unemployed. Anyone who has given up looking for work is not counted as unemployed. So what the figures are, in fact, are very different from your weekly announcements from Canada Manpower and the Canadian Labour, whatever it's called. Do machines create jobs? Yes. They create jobs for more machines. And it's high time that we got into a system where we concentrated on learning how to live rather than learning how to earn a living. If a machine can do a job of work faster, more efficiently, with less energy cost per unit of production, then let the damn machine wear the overalls and let the people enjoy the benefits of what those machines can do. And rather than pay farmers not to plant, rather than pay farmers to destroy quote-unquote surplus product, let's distribute it and let's enjoy the newfound technology that we have. You see, we've never been here before. We have always lived under conditions of physical scarcity. Hand tools and muscle power could never produce enough of everything for everybody. Machines can. The only thing lacking is that we have not made the adjustment in our thinking from hand tools and muscle power to the most complex technological social mechanism that has ever existed at any time in the history of mankind. What expertise do technocrats have to run the country? None. Technocrats are not going to run anything. The only people that are capable of running this, as I said, highly complex technological social mechanism are the people that are running it right now. And those people are not the businessmen, the bankers, the financiers, the politicians. these people are interfering with the smooth running of this technological society that we find ourselves in. Who is responsible for the provision of electric light in this auditorium at this time? Does anybody know his name? Does anybody vote for him? No. But without him, we wouldn't have light. Or heat. Or telephones. Or running water. Or flush toilets. There are people in every field of human endeavor that are providing us with services that we take so much for granted that it's amazing. We walk over and we flip a switch and you don't have to know anything about electricity, how it works, why it works. You pick up a telephone, you've learned how to go through a particular sequence of dialing, and you get to speak to just about anyone, anywhere in the world in a very short period of time. The only thing you have to concern yourself with is the bill at the end of the month, which again is an interference control with you making the best use of a telephone that you might be making. Again, the only people that can operate a highly complex technological society are the people that are running it right now. And again, these people, experts in their individual fields, are being interfered with through the process of an outmoded method of social control, the price system, money and politics, from the individual citizen being able to enjoy more fully that which is and can be made available to everyone. You all know that if you have purchasing power beyond your needs, you can indulge yourself in virtually any activity you might desire. Without purchasing power, you can die in a ditch, and nobody cares very much. What technocracy would do would be to organize, and it is felt that some 80 to 100 social and industrial sequences would be set up. Agriculture would be one of the industrial sequences. Mining, smelting, steel making, leather, ranching, transportation, communication, these things would be industrial sequences. The best people available to head up these sequences would be responsible to see that they operated smoothly and were well orchestrated and coordinated with all the other sequences. Their responsibility would be to see that the citizens of this continent were at liberty to choose whatever goods and whatever services they required, wherever and whenever they required them. Okay so far? There's a small chart that's probably too small to see. But of these 80 to 100 sequences, industrial and service, the individuals who headed up each of those sequences would sit on what would be called the continental control. Again, their responsibility is to see that all of the sequences are well orchestrated and coordinated to provide, whether it's goods or services, to the consuming population. One of the sequence heads chosen by all of the sequence heads would be chosen as the chairman of the Continental Control. So he would be Continental Director. The population divided into three fundamental groups. From birth to about 25 years would be the period in one's life when they obtained an education in the fullest sense of that word, limited only to the individual's own innate interests and abilities to progress as far and as fast as their, as I say, their own innate interests and abilities would take them. From 25 to 45 would be the period in every able-bodied citizen's life when they contributed back to their society some useful occupational endeavor of their choosing. At age 45 would be the period when retirement began. And from 45 until the time you die, still with full consuming privileges, you would be at liberty to organize your life in whichever manner you found satisfying to you. The only limitation placed upon you would be that you do not interfere with someone else's choice of how they choose to live their lives. Seems simple enough. At the present time, you've got more people trying to tell other people what they cannot do and how they should live their lives than we have time to mention at this time. But the people that have built and are operating the physical equipment that keeps all of us alive every day of our lives are the only people that are capable of running this system. And technocracy has no assumption of power theory. We will, if we fall into particular categories of ability to do things, we will fit into the scheme of things in whichever way that we can be useful to the society. But technocracy is not going to operate the kind of social mechanism that it has been saying, lo, these many years, is possible here on the North American continent. If such an operation ever does come into fruition, that is the end of this organization, Technocracy Incorporated. We're the only organization that I know of that is trying to work itself out of a job. If technocracy is so good, why don't more people know about it? Well, we certainly try our best. As you've already been told, the dues of this organization are $9 a year, 75 cents per member per month. That very severely restricts us in what we can do in the way of advertising our activities. One of our members went to the trouble to find out what a full-page ad in the Vancouver Sun for one insertion would cost. And it's something in excess of $13,000. And the newspapers and the television and the radio are in business to make money. and they are not particularly interested in an organization such as this that is talking about the complete abolition of money. And so we have to do what we do. We print some very good-looking, first-class printed material, but we have to do it on our own presses with our own voluntary labor. And what we sell at cost. As a matter of fact, most of it gets sold at less than cost. And we all dig into our own pockets in order to disseminate this information to anybody who will take the time to read it and think about it and hopefully act upon it. We are too finding that as conditions on the social scene grind down and get a little worse and more people get pushed a little tighter to the wall, that they are paying a little more attention to this idea than we have experienced in some years back. We mentioned earlier in the talk that the Second World War came along, a lot of the hunger disappeared, people went back to work in the factories, were taken into the military, they had money jingling in their pockets, and they forgot about the hard times. Well, as the hard times are returning, so is the social awareness of many more citizens. They're starting to look again for a new idea. They know damn well that there's something terribly wrong with the system as it's presently constituted. Ask yourself, is there anything missing on the shelves in the stores that might satisfy your hunger? And the answer is no. But you're denied access to that commodity unless you have the financial wherewithal to take it out through the check stand and pay for it. A little while, food banks, right in the city. Is there any reason for anybody to be hungry or to be without anything that they need to make their lives a comfortable, acceptable existence? And at every turn, you have to answer, no, there's nothing missing. The Chinese merchants down in the Vancouver Chinatown area traditionally shop in open-air markets. They are reluctant to go into the store and look at things. They brought these habits with them when they were imported from China in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s. Their customs have changed little, and they use much of the Vancouver sidewalk area to display much of their merchandise. They were warned or told that they couldn't continue to do this, and I guess they ignored the warning. And one day, a city dumpster came along with a crew, and they confiscated everything that was on the sidewalk, and they threw it into the dumpster, and they took it out to the Richmond dump and destroyed it. Now, there were all manner of foodstuffs involved in that seizure. Seize it, they could have. The warning was issued, it was ignored, but why destroy it? Why not take that food and give it to the food banks that are crying for donations to meet the needs of many of Vancouver's less fortunate? There were bananas and melons and all manner of vegetables that were just destroyed. But that, again, ladies and gentlemen, is the way the price system works. Shouldn't technocracy rent its hall for revenue and also join in the artistic world and destroy the military forever? Well, technocracy is not in any position to destroy the military. I don't know what sort of help we're going to get from the artistic world. And we find that we have to be very careful with who we might choose to rent this building facility to. As I say, we are not in a position to pay large insurance premiums for the possible use from by other than members of this organization and interested citizens who choose to attend these public meetings. It's not a question that I can provide much of an answer to. What is being done by Technocracy Incorporated to move Canada or other similar countries toward a technate? We are doing all that is within our physical and financial capacity. We print 2 field magazines that are both quarterly publications. The subscription price is $10 a year for both, or $5 a year for either one. We publish a variety of other information. We have a selection of one-page briefs that we do not charge for at all. We provide speakers free of charge to any group that cannot find the time to attend these public meetings. We speak to high schools, colleges, universities, service clubs, labor unions, anybody that invites us. We do not push ourselves on anybody. We find it easier with what we have to work with to wait to be invited, feeling that circumstances on the social scene is about the only thing that is going to make people think. As long as they're fat and happy, they care very little about what goes on in the day-to-day world. But when their bellies start rubbing against their backbones, it seems that something happens to the human being, and they start to wonder why whatever circumstance it is as it is, and how can it be different? How can it be better? And we publish as many handbills advertising these public meetings as we can find people to distribute in their own time and at their own expense. And what else can we do? In naming off the isms, did you miss capitalism? No, I did not miss capitalism. Capitalism is not a political philosophy. Capitalism is part of a broader definition that we used at the very beginning, price system. It is part of the money system. It matters not whether you're talking about dollars or pounds or rubles or yen or whatever it happens to be. The price system is the more accurate, the more all-encompassing definition. Capitalism is not something that stands on its own, but the definition given by technocracy defining price system is the one all-encompassing term that covers the lot. Are there any more questions coming forward? Seeing none, we would mention again that anybody interested in investigating further can either pick up some literature, subscribe to the magazines, or apply for affiliation to this organization. Again, the dues are 75 cents per member per month, $9 a year. Two other stipulations: you must be a citizen of one of the countries comprising the North American continent. And three, you must not be active or hold elective office in any political party. If you meet those requirements, you are more than welcome to investigate further. There will be someone from the new membership committee at this desk to my right, and whatever further questions you have can be asked there. I certainly thank you for your attention, and there are refreshments in the dining room downstairs. Again, thank you for your attention.